This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Today we're here with Dr. Rubina Kotak from Queen's University Belfast. Hi, Dr. Kotak.
Hello.
You're here to present a talk about supernovae arising from massive stars. Could you, first of all, remind our listeners what is a supernova?
Okay, so a supernova is basically a star that explodes at the end of its life. So, generally, there are two kinds of supernovae. One kind occurs when you have the core of stars like our sun that have evolved for a long time in orbit around another star. That's a particular kind of supernova with which we can actually measure distances and which won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 2011. The kind that I'm talking about arise from massive stars. So they come from stars that are something like eight times or more massive than our own sun. And they shine because they're burning hydrogen to helium and helium to carbon, things like that. At the point at which the core reaches iron, the star can no longer support itself against gravity, and it collapses and results in an explosion. So those are the two textbook varieties of supernovae. But today we're finding more and more peculiar objects which have forced us to come up with alternative ways to make stars explode.
So what's special about these supernovae from massive stars, and what kind of exotic objects are you talking about?
So for the normal variety of massive star supernovae, they generate most of the elements, most of the heavy elements that we see around us today. For the weird kinds, we are finding objects in the very distant universe that are extremely bright, and we have to come up with new theories to explain why they are so bright. At the same time, we are also finding events from new surveys that are very dim, and we have to try and explain those as well and link everything in a sort of coherent framework. So that's what we are trying to do.
Okay, but if the objects are particularly bright or particularly dim, what makes you say they're still supernovae, for example?
So the very bright ones, we don't know of any other mechanism that occurs in normal stars that would make them shine so brightly. We know exactly how far they are in many cases, so we can work out how bright they are intrinsically, and from there on we can conclude that they must arise from explosions. I think this is a very good question at the faint end, because in many cases we are not sure that this is really an explosion that destroys the star and leaves behind a compact remnant like a black hole or a neutron star. But there are certain indications, primarily coming from processed materials or heavy elements that we see that we observe in these explosions, that lead us to believe that they are in fact an explosion of some kind.
Just to clarify for astronomers, heavy elements is anything that's not hydrogen or helium. So a supernova is basically a massive explosion, and I can imagine that has a certain effect on the surrounding environment. What happens when it explodes?
So obviously a supernova explosion is very energetic, so it tends to destroy or sweep away a lot of the material that is in the immediate surroundings. But in some cases, when there is a bit of this material left off from previous phases of evolution, then we can actually use this interaction between the supernova and its surroundings to actually try and work out what kind of star exploded. And this is something that we are very actively doing using different telescopes and so on. And so it's kind of looking back in time, as it were, or doing sort of supernova forensics. So using the leftover material from the explosion to piece together what kind of events led up to the explosion itself. And that helps us constrain theories of stellar evolution, which are particularly ill-constrained for massive stars, as it happens.
What's the current picture of stellar evolution, and what do we now know about massive stars and how they evolve?
So basically, the lives of stars more massive than about 8 to 10 solar masses is governed by mass law. So that is takes the form of stellar winds, or can be eruptions of one sort or another. And this material is thrown off from the outer layers of the star, and it moves away from the star, or it escapes the star with a certain speed. And sometimes, just after that happens, the star itself explodes. And we can then study this interaction quite closely. As far as stellar evolution itself goes, you basically have a star that goes from burning hydrogen in its core to helium, which then evolves to burning successively heavier and heavier elements up to iron. That's the sort of general picture that we have, but we have so many variations in the kinds of massive stars that we see that we're still working on trying to understand exactly which phase happens when and for how long.
Okay. And you mentioned an interesting thing about these massive stars is that potentially they throw out a lot of dust when they explode. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So one of the puzzles that has been around for a long time is that in very, very distant galaxies, so when the universe was only a very small fraction of its current age, we see enormous quantities of dust. And by that, I mean sort of grains of silicates and graphites and things like that, rather than the dust we want to sweep off the bookshelf. But so the puzzle is where these grains come from. In the local universe, we think it's the lower mass stars that dominate this dust budget. But at very distant galaxies, this cannot be the case, because these low mass stars aren't old enough to produce these dust grains.
So why aren't the low mass stars the dominant contributor at larger distances?
We know from studies of low mass stars that they need to be of a certain age before they can produce, they can reach their dust-producing stage. And if we look far enough back, or large enough distances, which is the same thing, then these stars are simply not old enough to have reached that stage. So one of the ideas that was proposed already in the 60s was that when supernovae explode, they have a lot of the material that they eject is metal rich, and therefore there's a possibility for grains to condense. So we've been trying to test this idea using different measurements in somewhat more nearby supernovae to check if this is in fact correct.
And when you talk about the particles condensing into dust, what do you mean exactly?
So obviously, when you have a supernova explosion, everything is very hot and in the gas phase. And at some point, because it's expanding very fast at several thousands of kilometers per second, it also cools quite rapidly. And this allows grains to form or to solidify. And this is what we mean by dust condensing in supernova material.
Okay. So what kind of observations do you do? Do you use optical telescopes, infrared telescopes, anything else? Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so because supernovae are so energetic, they emit across the entire electromagnetic spectrum. So from very high energy ultraviolet and X-rays all the way out to submillimeter and radio wavelengths. I particularly work in the optical and infrared regimes where supernovae emit most of their light, as it were, during its younger phases. And as it gets older, one tends to move to longer wavelengths.
Great. And so what does the future hold for these massive stars? What are you hoping to find out more about this?
One of the things many of us are very much looking forward to is the next generation of ground and space-based telescopes. We'd like to ideally look for the very first supernovae that ever went off in the universe, and to find what epochs they went off at, what kind of supernovae they were, whether they bear any resemblance to the supernovae that we see today.
So these would be the deaths of the very first generation of stars in the universe.
That's correct.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Kotak.
Thank you.